Well, Jay, first of all, thank you so much for agreeing to come on with us today, and thank you so much for what you do for basketball. And it's always a great time if you're an NBA guy to get ready for the draft. So exciting. What is it like for you? It's a lot of work, but what's it like for you?
Well, I think this is my 19th draft for ESPN. The first one was the LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh draft, you know, Carmelo Anthony back in 2003. So, I mean, I could sit and tell you it's a lot of work, but I look at these players anyway. So really the only work is just organizing all the material as we get toward the draft. And, you know, this was the most challenging draft because, one, there are a lot of really good players that we're going to be talking about. But two, you know, the draft's been pushed back a month. So it's a little different timing wise. So we've had even more time to scrutinize players and talk ourselves out of good decisions. You know, it seems like the longer the process takes, the more we're picking at players rather than talking about how good they are.
No question about that. And I think, you know, you almost paralysis by analysis is the old phrase. I would like to know how you evaluate a player and translate it to the NBA. And has that changed in the last, say, 10 years or so because of the avalanche of the three?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, hopefully you get a little bit better in how you look at things. I think the game has changed a great deal, whereas maybe in the late 90s into the early 2000s, I probably leaned toward big guys, you know, sort of size more. And size isn't as big of a determining factor. I used to be, you know, lean more toward bigger guards. I don't worry about that quite as much. And honestly, it probably took me a little while at my age to wrap my head around how valuable young talent is versus experienced talent. You know, you look back on certain drafts and guys that were coming out of high school back in the day, you're saying, well, wait a minute, even though he's not ready now, even though he's not skilled now, he's going to be. And his talent level is going to eclipse some of the experience that advantages that other players have over that player now. So I think I've gotten a little bit better at that. And you know, you've had more swings and misses, so you're not maybe you're not quite as, I don't know whether the word is arrogant or overconfident or what. I used to pronounce pretty clearly whether I thought a guy could play or not. And, you know, oftentimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But one thing you learn is nobody's right all the time.
You know, it's interesting, too, in talking to coaches and scouts over the years, my time in the league, a lot of things they look for that you wouldn't even think about it, you know, until you process it a little bit. But like a lot of our scouts in years gone by would go to games early. They want to see how the guy warms up. They want to see how he interacts with his teammates. They want to see, you know, how does he respond when the coach, you know, barks at him a little bit and all of those things. And I guess it's essential because I guess it's all part of the package.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, especially when you're considering a long-term commitment to a player as a professional, where, you know, is the player going to be professional in his approach? And that means getting to the facility early, continuing to work on weaknesses, becoming a better player, it not being all about you. I mean, as you know better than I do, there are only a handful of players in each conference that are, you know, superstar caliber players. Everybody else is really going to be in a way a role player. And so just even at the combine, I was at the combine in Chicago recently, and people are talking about, well, what does this player need to show? And it's that none of these players are going to be leading scorers on any team that drafts them. And, you know, can you add value? And that's the way the sort of the majority of players in the league have to approach things. And you're going to have to be a worker. And if you're not willing to work and sort of sacrifice, that's something that teams need to know on the front end.
Let's get right to it. Let's talk about some of these guys. And Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State seems to be the player that everybody is kind of in agreement is the number one pick in this year's draft. What separates him from the rest?
Well, he's got all the measurables. You know, he's a 6'8 point guard that can really handle and pass, and he's got a great basketball IQ and a smoothness to his game that's unusual. You know, he's not – I think some people will question whether he's a transformational player, one of those guys that can be a perennial all-star and knock on the door to Springfield at some point in his life. And I think Cade Cunningham is that type of player. You know, you can swing and miss on that prognostication, but I think he's got that type of talent in an uber-talented draft. So I think he's the best player. Shoots 40% from three, so he can stretch it. Very good off the dribble. A really good passer and a good finisher. And I think he's underrated as a defender. He can guard multiple spots, and he makes clutch plays toward the end of games without forcing things, and he makes them on both ends of the court. So for me, he's one of the most complete prospects I've scouted in my time, and I'd put him up with just about anybody as far as being a complete player. The one thing he lacks is that he's very athletic. I don't want to make it seem like he's not, but he's not a freak athlete. Like, there's some guys that are just, you know, freakish in their athleticism. He's just an outstanding, you know, he's got to rely on solely being an outstanding athlete and a super skilled player. But I agree with you. I don't think there's much question that he's going to go number one to Detroit.
I think that's going to be a nice pick for Detroit. First player in Oklahoma State history to be an AP All-America first team. So now there's a bunch of players just below him. Who are some of the guys you look at right below Cunningham?
Yeah, I think there are three guys that are jockeying for the number two pick, which right now I think Houston has. And I would put Jalen Green of the G League up there along with Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga and Evan Mobley of USC. Evan Mobley is a big guy who's, you know, 7 feet tall, 7'4" wingspan, kind of a Swiss Army knife defensively in his ability to block shots, to guard pick and roll, switch out on a guard for a few dribbles. He can, you know, not only protect the rim, but he can bother shots of perimeter players that he switches off on, and can really run, gets off his feet quickly, and is a good offensive player. He's not a stretch five or stretch four by any measure right now, but I think he's going to be able to stretch a defense in the future. But one of those guys, you know, he's Pac-12 Rookie of the Year, Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. Those guys don't come along very often. And off, you know, in a lot of years, I think he'd be the number one pick, frankly. But then Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga is a, you know, 6'5" point guard that played quarterback in high school, could have played quarterback anywhere in the country as a football player, but has unusual vision as a point guard and ability, not only ability to absorb a bump, he can dish one out and finish. And he's almost surgical in how he takes apart pick and roll situations. Like Cunningham, he's a clutch player. I think everybody saw that shot he hit in the Final Four against UCLA. But also a very good defender. You know, gets a lot of steals, and you know, you watch film and say, okay, well, he's kind of out of position here and not in the stance. But then he makes a defensive play by being instinctive and playing the ball rather than playing his man. Good jump shooter, and I think he's got a great chance to be a great player in the league. And then Jalen Green can lead the NBA in scoring at some point in his future. Super athletic, quick burst, can really shoot it, you know, sort of a human highlight film in that way, and I think he can become a very good defender.
Yeah, he's a guy that played some high school ball right nearby at Prolific Prep up in Napa, and they produced a couple of guys to the NBA recently. Josh Jackson was one. Now we're down to sort of the middle of the lottery, and that's where the Warriors have their first pick. Who do you expect to be on the board when the Golden State makes their selection at number seven?
There's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be really good and probably in most drafts would be gone by the time that Golden State gets a chance to draft. I mean, you know, sort of the high end of the wish list, if they decide to keep that pick, and who knows, Golden State could trade it because it does have great value, but would be three guys, I think. One would be Scottie Barnes of Florida State. I'd be surprised if he lasted that long and got to seven, but he is maybe the best overall defender of the draft, kind of a glue guy that can handle the ball as a point guard, super long armed, and can really defend almost anybody. Doesn't shoot it yet. He's going to have to really improve his shooting, but he's capable of that. Just a playmaker that's got, you know, just crazy potential. The other guy I would say that I would have my eye on if I were Golden State would be Davion Mitchell of Baylor. And maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe 10, we'd be talking about, well, he's kind of small. He's 6'2". He's got a 6'5 wingspan. But he's unbelievably explosive, just blows by people to get to the rim, shoots well over 40% from three, is good in pick and roll situations. He turns it over a little bit, but nothing to get too worried about. And he's a magnificent defender. Really impacts the ball, I think, better than any defender in this draft, and plays his tail off. Like, one thing you know about Mitchell, like, you know, fail is a hard word to use, but some guys fail in the NBA, and he's not going to. His heart is gigantic, and he's a worker, and I think he'll be a big time player. And there are a couple other guys, Keon Johnson of Tennessee, I would say, and then Jonathan Kuminga from the G League, who's about 6'8", and talk about a freak athlete. You know, he's all potential. He's from the Republic of Congo, and he's got a ton of ability that just needs to be, I think, refined. And he had a great year in the G League. He started off better than he finished, but I think he's got, you know, he could be gone by number five. He could last to number 10. But he's got a ton of ability.
Jay, as we look at it, we're talking with Jay Billis of ESPN. He's been nice enough to join us. Just a couple more questions for you, and thank you so much for your time. Who are some of your, you know, sleepers? Who's rising in this draft, do you think? Give us some names to keep an eye out for on draft night.
Well, there are a number of guys that I think have a chance to be really good players. One is Cam Thomas from LSU, one of the best shooters in the draft, can shoot it off the dribble. He's only 6'4". But is a really talented scorer. I'm a big fan of Moses Moody of Arkansas, who's 6'6", but his arms go to 7 feet. And another guy that can, he's rookie of the year in the Southeastern Conference and all SEC, but he can really score it. Good pull-up jump shooter, and excellent at getting to the free throw line. I think he can be a really good defender. The other guy is James Bouknight, who's from UConn. Excellent shooter and really has shot it well in a lot of his workouts and at the combine. He could move in. He could be one of those guys that Golden State takes a solid look at number seven. I think early on in the draft, I had him 15th or 16th on the list I keep, but he keeps rising up. And a guy that you've seen a lot of from Oregon, Chris Duarte, even though he's older, it's crazy. We talk about a guy who's 21, 22. Actually, he may be 23 now.
But even still,
what an old man! I can't believe can you believe he's still walking upright? But he's a really good player and can really shoot it strong. But there's real value in this draft further on into the first round. You're going to get there are some lottery talents that are going to go in the 20s. I think. And it speaks to one of the strongest drafts I've seen in my time. I'm not very good at ranking things like this, but, aside from the very first draft I did for ESPN in 2003, which was the best one, I think we're going to look back on this one as being one of the most talented drafts that we've seen in the last 20 years.
And like with any draft, and I've been around the league now for roughly 30 years, but the there's always value in the second round. There's always four or five guys who end up having good careers that come out of the second round, and I look forward to that as well. There's always some value there. So.
Yeah, and you never know where you're going to find it. You know, I mean, Golden State's the prime example of that. I thought that Draymond Green was going to be a good NBA player. I did not foresee, all-star caliber career for him like he's had. But it speaks to your point that especially in this year's draft, there are going to be some really good players, some first-round talented players that are going to be pushed into the second round, maybe even the middle of the second round. It's just a question of finding the right ones.
You know, as I let you go, I wanted to point this out to people that are listening to this, that Jay Billis is not only just a college basketball guy and an analyst and getting ready for the draft, but he's also a voice for athletes in NCAA sports. And I've watched and admired you over the years for doing that, for being a voice for those athletes and standing up for them, you know, in what is a very complicated but unfair situation for them. And I applaud you for that, and I think it's a job well done.
That's kind of you to say. You know, it's funny, you know, in college sports, somehow fairness seems to be something we have a hard time with. And, you know, finally, after the Supreme Court, you know, kind of took the NCAA out to the woodshed, you know, you're starting to hear college sports officials talk about, you know, athletes being treated the same as other students, that they shouldn't be restricted from doing things that other students are able to do. And that doesn't seem like that hard of a concept, but we're getting closer to that. And, you know, we're not at any sort of finish line yet for athletes, but we're at least a little closer to the starting blocks where they get to compete in this multi-billion dollar business with everybody else.
Jay, thank you so much for your time and continued success.
Thank you very much. Great being with you.